This interview is with Mrs. Arthur Dittert, 811 Denver Boulevard, San Antonio, Texas. The interview is taking place October 21st, 1972. Mrs. Dittert is helping us recall things of her childhood and youth in the German community of Austin County in the early 1900s. I think maybe it'd be a good start if you could tell us something about the schools and the teachers or any of this type of thing.
Okay, turn it on.
Okay.
When I first started to school, I went to a two-room to school, and we had two teachers, the elementary teacher and the teacher that taught the higher grades. The elementary teacher taught the first three grades, and it was a German community, and when the children came to school, they could speak very little English, and some of them couldn't speak English at all, and they would have to learn the language before they could learn to read and write. And after they accomplished this, why, then they started on their studies. And after they completed the third grade, then they went into the next room, and the next room was taught by a man teacher. And during this time, they were taught the fourth, fifth, and sixth grades. And after they completed the sixth grade, we did not have a graduation, but we always had a big festival after the school year was over. And we practiced for this for several months ahead of time. And we had the festival at a hall which was a mile from the school. And the children marched from the school to the hall. We all carried United States flags, and we marched two by two until we came to the hall, and we entered the hall, and then we separated and had a drill with the flags, and after that we presented the program, and we had speeches and songs and plays, which lasted about 2 or 3 hours. And after this was over, each child received a gift from the school trustees, and the teacher and his wife also received a gift of some kind. Usually it was either a nice pitcher with six glasses to match, or a nice big bowl, or something that they could use for the house. And after these festivities were over, we went outside and went to the lemonade stand and had lemonade and ice cream. And the lemonade was made in a big tin tub, and the lemons were squeezed, and sugar was added, and water, and if we were fortunate to have ice, why, we put ice into it, otherwise we used just cool spring water, and this was always very refreshing. And the festivities lasted until about 10, 11 o'clock at night, when they had an orchestra and had a big dance, and after that everybody went home. You want more of that, Dan?
Well, one thing I was wondering is, you said the children went to the sixth grade. What came after sixth grade? Did they have another place to go to high school?
No, that was, they usually went to the sixth grade, sometimes to the seventh, but very rarely, because they helped their parents in the cotton fields.
All right. How about traveling? Can you remember anything about trips?
Well, during the summer, my mother and I usually made a train trip to Chicago. My mother came from Chicago to the South, and she always liked to go home during the summer and visit her relatives. And we'd pack a trunk, and we usually worked on this for a week or two ahead of time, packing the trunk, and then it was hauled to the station by someone in the community that had a wagon, and he would take the trunk to the depot and where it was put on the train. It would take us 3 days and three nights to get to Chicago. And there were no screens on the train, and we had cinders blowing all over us. And by the time we got to Chicago, our dresses were black from cinders, and usually we had several cinders that lit in our eyes. And at one time, when we boarded the train was full of people. And we noticed that they were foreigners who had just come to the United States. And they had baggage of all descriptions and kinds, some very big suitcases or valises, as they were called at that time. And there was very little place for anybody to sit down, so you just sat wherever you could get a seat to sit. And after we came home from the journey, I was about 6 years old, and my mother noticed that I was scratching my head, and this kept going on for several days. And finally she said, "What's wrong with your head?" And I said, "Well, I don't know, but it sure itches." She says, "Well, come here," she says, "and sit down on the floor and put your head in my lap, and I want to see what's wrong." So she took a stiff hairbrush and brushed my hair, and she says, "Why, Marie," she says, "you have lice on your head." And this is something we had never had before and didn't know how to cope with the situation. So my father says, "Well, I will go to Brenham," which was 7 miles, "and go to a pharmacist and see what he can do about it. Maybe we can get help." So he did that. He went to the pharmacist, and the pharmacist gave him some medicine. And when he came home, he told my mother that she was supposed to wash my hair every day, and after she washed it, to apply this medicine. And in 1 week's time, the druggist said that I shouldn't have any more trouble, which she did. And then after about a week's time, well, her head started itching. And so some of the pests traveled in her direction, but it didn't take long, and she got rid of them too. And another time when we were traveling, a friend of ours who had never been on a train before told my mother that she wanted to go to Detroit and whether she could travel as far as Chicago with us. She lived on a big farm, and so we were going to stop at the station where she was to get on. And when we stopped there and she got on the train, she was a very large woman, and she had a basket. It was almost as big as a bushel basket, and she had it filled with food for us to eat on our journey. And she had everything imaginable in the basket. She had fruit, and she had chicken, and she had homemade bread and coffee cake and all things that you would find on a farm. She had prepared and had taken it with us, and we had so much food that when we got off in Chicago, we still had a half a basket full of food, enough to last us another week. And let's see, what else? I guess that's it, huh?
I was wondering, do you remember traveling before automobiles came to your community?
Yes. We traveled by buggy. We had a buggy and we had a real good horse. His name was Prince, a white horse. And we would go to town, which was 7 miles from where we lived, with our buggy. And whenever it rained, the roads were very muddy and the ruts were very deep, and it was very hard to travel when it rained. And it would take us 1 hour to get from our house to town, and we had to drive pretty fast. And one time we were going to a meeting, and my mother had dressed me in a white organdy dress, and we were ready to leave, and my father was closing the gate, and I fell out of the buggy and fell under the buggy wheel, and the wheel went over my forehead, and before my parents could get to me, the wheel had passed halfway over my forehead, which made a very deep gash, and so they stopped the horse and picked me up and took me back in the house, and I had a very deep gash, and the blood was running all over my pretty new dress. But they thought that I wasn't hurt very badly, and so they washed the wound, and in time it healed. We never went to a doctor. It was never sewed up.
I see you still have a slight scar the eyebrow from that.
And until this day, I still have the scar where the buggy wheel went over my forehead.
One time you told a story about your father in a buggy experience.
Yes, he was teaching the higher grades in the school which I attended, and the school superintendent had come to visit the school that day, and he wanted to take the train to another town, and he asked my father whether he would take his buggy and horses to town and take him to the station, and then take the horse. He had two horses, and to take the buggy and horses back to our house, and when he returned, well, he would come to our house and pick up the horses and buggy and go back home. So my father said sure, he would be glad to. And so he took him to the station, and on the way back, my father was in the buggy all alone, and it was a very hilly country. And as he was coming down, driving down the hill, the horses started to run away, and he was thrown over the dashboard and thrown into the ditch. It was very rocky, and his leg was broken, and he couldn't move. And it was getting pretty late at night, and he laid there for about 4 hours and called for help. And finally, a man came by in a wagon, and he heard my father, and he stopped, and he saw what had happened, and he picked up my father and put him in the wagon and took him to Brenham to the hotel and called a doctor, and they set my father's leg and kept him there in the hotel for several days until he was able to be moved and to be brought back home. And from that time on, he always walked with a limp because they didn't have the proper care like they do now.
One of the things that I was wondering about there's something about weddings or this type of customs. Can you think of something along that line?
When I was very young and we were living in this German community, weddings were a big thing. And the boys and girls always got married in the fall after the harvest had been gathered. And that was the time for weddings. And you would always know when the time was coming that you, when you were invited to a wedding, because a horse with a rider would come into your yard, ride into your yard, and the horse would be decorated, the bridle would be decorated with streamers, and this was a sign that you were going to have an invitation for a wedding. And when you saw this rider on this decorated horse, why, you went out into the yard, and then he would recite a little poem which invited you to the wedding, and he would tell you who was getting married and where the wedding was going to be. And then in about 2 weeks' time, why, the wedding would take place. And they would come to the community church early in the morning and be married, and then all the invited guests, which usually consisted of the whole community, went to these people's home where the wedding was to be held. And for days, the women of the community prepared for the wedding. They cooked soup and chickens and all different kinds of meat in big pots out in the yard, and long tables were built out in the yard, and then they would serve dinner, and of course the bride and groom sat at the head of the table where they also had a big wedding cake. And after dinner was served, all the guests went into the house, and then around 2 o'clock you had coffee and cake, and then you went back into the house, and the wedding gifts were open, and everybody came in to see all the beautiful wedding gifts. And that lasted nearly all afternoon. And then the men and the boys would go back to their particular farms and feed their cattle, and then come back for the evening's festivities. Then around 5 or 6 o'clock, they would have supper again in the yard. And after supper, they would gather back in the house, and they would have either an orchestra, and they would have dancing, and then about 12 o'clock everybody went home, and the festivities lasted the whole day well into the night. And before the people went home, why, they would have what they called a shivaree, and the young men would come with all kinds of plow handles and anything, and cowbells, anything that would make a noise, and they would march around the house, and they call it a shivaree, and they would make a lot of noise, and they would keep that up for about 30 or 40 minutes until the groom and the bride came outside to welcome them in the house for drinks and coffee and cake. After this was over, why, people went home.
Now, one time you said something about some gypsies that came to the community.
Well, we had about once a year there would be a band of gypsies that would come into the community. And they used to stop at a spring where they had good drinking water, which wasn't too far from where we lived, and they usually had seven or eight wagons full of gypsies, maybe sometimes more wagons, sometimes less. And the women were dressed in very colorful clothing, and they would go to the houses in the community and tell fortunes. And also a lot of stealing went on in the chicken houses during the time that the gypsies were around. And people were always more or less afraid of the gypsies and never did like to see them come into the community. And this particular day, three or four of the gypsies came into the blacksmith shop and asked the blacksmith for some money. And he was busy. He had a big sledgehammer in his hand, and he was busy with his work. And so before he knew it, his billfold was missing out of his pocket, and he told a gypsy at the door, he says, "I want my billfold back." And he says, "Well, we don't have it." And he says, "Oh, yes, you do." And he says, "I want it back." He says, "Or I'll use a sledgehammer on you." And so the gypsy did get afraid, and he says, "All right, we'll give you the your billfold back." But the one at the door didn't have it, and there was another gypsy which was at another place in the garage. In the blacksmith shop, which was quite a ways from the other gypsy, and he was the one that handed him the billfold, so the blacksmith never knew how it got there, but anyway, he got his money back.
Thinking back a minute, when we were talking about weddings, was there anything unusual about 4th of July celebrations?
Well, we always had a big barbecue at the community hall, but really there wasn't anything unusual about it. They still have those celebrations today where they have a big barbecue and have plenty of food and drinks to go with it. About Christmas. It was always a great celebration. We would start on the 24th, and we would have a big tree in the church, which was decorated, and the children presented a program with Christmas carols and the program. The ushers would light the Christmas tree with candles, and it was a beautiful sight to see all the candles lit, which were about several hundred candles. And after the program, each child was given a bag of goodies by the trustees, and in this bag were fruits of different kinds, candies, and nuts. And there was a present for each child. Boys gifts for boys and girls gifts for girls. Each child took their bag home, and at their Christmas celebration at home, they opened their bag to see what was in what they had received. After they came home, they had their Christmas celebration at home. They also had a tree and had gifts for all the children and had good things to eat. And on the 25th, they would start celebrating the regular Christmas dinners. And at first, they would go to the church and have a Christmas service. And after that, they would go to their own homes and have their Christmas dinner, which usually consisted of turkey and dressing, vegetables, lots of cake and pies, and everything that made a Christmas dinner good. In the afternoon, presents again were exchanged, and on the second Christmas day, the Christmas celebration was very similar to the first Christmas day. They celebrated all week until New Year. And at New Year, they would have a New Year's Eve celebration, and that would conclude the festivities for the Christmas week.
What type of trees did they use for Christmas trees?
They used cedar trees in this community.
Did each person cut their own?
Yes. Each family went to the woods and cut their own Christmas tree. Some wanted larger trees and some wanted smaller trees.
When you used lighted candles, did they ever cause fires?
Very seldom. They had very good little containers for their candles, and it was very seldom that you heard of a Christmas fire.
We were talking about horse and buggies a while ago. Can you remember your first car ride?
Yes, there was a man in our community who bought a car, and we visited him and his wife on a Sunday afternoon, and he told us that he would like to take us for a ride in his new car. We were real excited about this and took the ride. There were no doors on the car, and my mother and I, we got in the back seat. And the roads were very bumpy, and it was a very hilly country, and we thought we would be bumped out of the car before we ever got home, and we were very glad to get out of the car. It was quite an experience.
Were there any unusual practices in banking that were different from banking practices now?
Yes, banking was a very different thing than it is today. Nearly everyone was known in the community, and it was very easy to go to the bank and borrow money. If you were low on funds and you needed extra money, all you had to do was to go to the bank, and if the banker knew you, he was very nice about letting you loan money and pay it back in the fall after you had gathered your harvest. And sometimes you did not even have to sign a note.
Did any people in the community not use the bank?
Yes. Some people still had the idea that it wasn't a good idea to put your money in the bank. And we often heard rumors of people burying their money in tin cans under the house, or putting it in under the mattress, or in some place where they thought that it would be safe instead of taking it to the bank.
One time you told a story about your mother and a Sunday school that she started. I'd like it if you could tell that one again.
We moved to another German community, and in this community there was no church, and the people were not very religious, and the children grew up without knowing very little about religion, or in fact nothing at all. And my mother thought that something should be done in order for the children to learned something about religion. And since she was a teacher in the elementary grades, she thought about the idea of starting a Sunday school. And since there was no German teacher in the community at this time, the people were very anxious for their children to learn to read and write German. She thought if she would have a Sunday school and would teach the children how to read and write German, and also teach them religion, this would be one way of teaching them religion. And so she went to the trustees and asked them if she might use the school rooms in order to start her Sunday school. And so when she agreed to teach the children German, why, they were very glad for her to use the school room. And she had quite a bit of literature, and so the children came, and she had a large group, and she taught them how to read and write on Sunday mornings, and also taught them religion. And when it was time to start a Christmas program, she thought it would be a nice thing to have a pageant depicting the Christmas story. So she chose some of the children for the play. They had Mary and Joseph and the angels and the wise men, and had very beautiful costumes. And this program was held in the school auditorium. And the people came, and there were so many people there they couldn't hardly get into the school. And after the program was over, they were so impressed with the program that they just could not thank my mother enough for having such a lovely program. And this was the beginning of a church that had been started years later.
Mrs. Dittert says she has run out of stories, but Mr. Dittert has come in. Can you tell us anything about early justice in the Cat Spring community?
Boy, I can't write. There was a man that was in the habit of getting drunk every once in a while and come home from the saloon, and he beat up his wife, and the community kind of got tired of that. So one day, one of my uncles and also my brother, who is much older than I am, framed up to watch when he comes home and beating his wife. They would go in and drag him out of the house, tie him to a tree, and then give him a good whipping with some horse whips. And after they got through, they told him, "Now you know how it feels to get beat up, so now you better not beat your wife anymore, and if you do, we'll just come back and give you another load."
Did this solve it?
So that solved this problem of wiping for a while, at least.
Do you have any memories of farming in the community?
Oh my goodness, do I. Corn and cotton were the main crops, and once in a while, well, and not once in a while, but every year they would also raise their crops of potatoes, Irish potatoes and sweet potatoes, mostly for their home use, not for retail purpose at all. And then there was also watermelons and cucumbers. They would raise watermelons. That was in about the 1920s when they started on a large scale to have the farmers produce watermelons. And they would bring them into town by the wagon loads, load them in boxcars, and ship them to some northern markets. And that lasted for about 3 years, and then they got tired of that. And about the same time, some concern made them raise cucumbers, pickling cucumbers. And they were supposed to be hauled into town, and there was a larger pickling vat built for about 1,500 gallons. And those farmers would bring in their cucumbers and dump them into that vat, which contained the brine, the pickling brine. And after the crop was harvested, these pickers would be transported to Houston. And they just didn't pan out like they supposed to. So in about 2 years, that pickling business was all over with too. And so everything that they had done had faded out.
Do you know if the wild grapes were of any use to the farmers?
Yes, they sure were, because all the farmers, at least, most of them had shrubbery going on their farms, and lots of them just went into the woods and picked those wild grapes when they were ripe and hauled them home and put them into a big barrel, usually a 50-gallon barrel with one end removed, and they would stomp them and crush those grapes and add sugar, I don't know what amount, and that would start a fermentation. And after a certain length of time, about a week or 10 days, this fermentation was completed. And then the grapes were mostly pulp and floated to the bottom of the, to the top of the barrel, and they were skimmed off and used for hog feed for one part. But the juice remained in the bottom part of the barrel, and it was drawn off, and some more sugar added to it and fermented in a barrel of its own, usually a 25 or 30 or even 50-gallon barrel of grape juice that was fermented, and after several weeks the fermentation had ceased, while then the product was considered palatable, and it was drawn off at the bottom of the keg once in a while for parties and home consumption and so on. But it was good, clear, reddish wine that was produced from these wild grapes.
One time you mentioned sugar cane. How did they use sugar cane?
Well, after the cane was planted and raised to its ripening stages, then they would cut the tops off and strip all the leaves and cut the cane in wagon loads and haul it to a kind of a cane mill, you would call it, and there each farmer would stack his cane in a particular place, and in rotation each farmer's cane would be pressed with the mule power press that would crush the cane as it went through, and the juice would be siphoned off or drained off in a little tube, or a big tube rather, to a kind of a vat, possibly 4 feet wide and about 6 or 8 feet long, and contained several hundred gallons of juice maybe, but you never fill it up because of the boil over. So that was just boiled up until it came to a certain consistency, and then was drained off into another vat where it would cool and be drawn off then into the farmer's barrels or tubs, whatever you call it. Usually it was just tubs, not tubs, barrels. Some of them maybe just had 20 gallons, maybe 30, and once in a while even as much as 40 or 50 gallons. And that would be a supply most of the time for a whole year for the farmer's home. And sometimes it was even got older than that, and it would turn to sugar. And there was another project that I was interested in once out of time. There was a farmer living about 8 miles from town, and his wife was pretty sick, and she also needed dental care. And the doctor that we had could remedy that situation all right, but she was too sick to take to town, so we had to go in a Model T Ford. And the doctor took his equipment, dental chair and whatnot, all into the car, and I had to drive, and it was a cold winter day. And so when we got to the house, while the doctor unloaded his equipment and went to the house to perform his duties there, and I was not invited in, I was left out in the car in the cold, and I was sitting there for about 3 hours, just watching the wind blow. So that was all into it, except when the doctor finally got through, we loaded the equipment back in a car and here the old Model T went back home. That's all.
Do you remember the first car in the community?
Well, the first car in the community, yeah. My Uncle Chris had a Model T Ford four-passenger car, and he would drive us once in a while to some neighbor or something like that.
All right. Thank you very much.